We know what you're thinking. I just want jeans that look great, feel great, and hold up. At Ariat, we've been doing some thinking too. We're thinking about fit that moves with you, no matter where the ride takes you. Durability that stands up to hard work, harder play, and comfort that never quits. And all this thinking, it's really just about more living. Now, it's time to stop thinking and start shopping. Find your Ariat jeans at Ariat.com or a retailer near you.
Bill's famous cheese spread studios in the downstairs pub. The Blockout Sports Pod is back on the air. From behind the master control desk in the aforementioned downstairs pub, I am your host and moderator for this evening. My name is Travis Carter. Behind me, the man who keeps track of our picks, tries to keep us in line, and helps us to produce the show. You might call him by a number of names. We call him Mr. Electricity, Whiteboard Jody. Over my right shoulder at the high top table is the big fellow, the tuna country, Matt Kempf. And bellied up to the bar, a man whose spidey sense is always tingling, the fabulous one, Freddie Bender.
I am a tingling.
And I would just like to note that he is wearing his Bad News Bears jersey tonight. Yes. So for the remainder of the episode, which is the entire episode, I will not be referring to you as Freddie. I will be referring to you as Buttermaker.
All right.
So pipe down, Buttermaker.
I like it.
I love it. I love it. Quick reminder, everybody, we are on social media, on Twitter, at Blockout Pod, on Facebook. Just type in Blockout Sports Pod into your Facebook search bar. Drop us a note. Give us a follow. Let us know what you want to hear. We're in a kind of a weird spot sports-wise right now. We were talking about it outside pre-show tonight where, you know, college basketball is getting to the end of the regular season, but we're still a few weeks away from conference tournaments and the NCAA tournament. The NBA just back from the All-Star break. The NFL, of course, we know is a year-round league, and we do have some events coming up. It's this weekend, right?
Yeah, the Combine's this weekend in Indianapolis.
Right.
Underwear Olympics.
So if there's anything that you guys want to hear us talk about, of course, we're ramping up around here locally for the Kentucky Derby, and Fred keeps us all up to date on the Derby preps and what to look ahead to. But really, I wanted to start the show tonight with, I guess, because it's kind of a dead time in sports, kind of the story that dominated after Saturday and early this week, which was we had, and we've actually discussed this topic on the show before.
Did we talk about this when Caitlin Clark got
We
bumped?
Did.
Okay.
So we
I
did.
I don't really remember that one.
And my point was I thought it was inevitable that somebody was going to get hurt and that I hoped it wasn't a big star and I hoped that it wasn't something real serious. But, of course, we're talking about court storming. And it happened on Saturday that Wake Forest got a big home win against Duke. And as the clock was ticking down, the fans at Wake Forest stormed the court, and Kyle Filipowski,
as Coach Shire refers to him as Flip,
he got ran into on the court, limped off. I haven't heard what his status or what...
He's fine.
Okay, good.
He says his quote, "I'm still a little sore, but it's nothing major."
Okay.
So good for Flip.
Looked like that guy hit it. Did he have camera equipment in his hand? I know when they showed it at normal speed from the whole side of the arena of them all just exploding, not from his angle, but from the side angle, it looked like that dude was flying a lot faster than when he hit him head on and you saw the back angle of it.
We have not talked about this pre-show, so I have no idea where you guys stand on this. So you all may be 1,000% opposite of where I've always thought storming the court was stupid. And I was talking to a friend of mine earlier this week where, and I understand it's probably a like an environmental thing. When I was growing up, when I was in college, Indiana never lost games at home. They were always favored to win games at home. I think my 4 years, or well, I say 4 years, longer than that, but my years at Indiana,
Dr. Carter.
My years at Indiana, I think they probably lost less than what, maybe 6-7 home games total. And so it just wasn't a thing. Plus you had Coach Knight, who everybody was terrified of.
Well, let's be real. Like, a school like Indiana should never storm a court. I feel like when you're a proud traditional program, you should never storm a court.
I agree, but then I'm reminded.
I know of the
that
when they beat Kentucky in 2012.
Well, and Indiana has been not very good for the better part a lot of years over the past two decades, and they stormed the court when they beat Purdue. They've done that a couple times.
I've got an issue with that, man.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I despise it.
All right, I'm all for court storming. Now, Wake Forest, I feel like every person at Wake Forest should go to jail. That entire university should all be in jail. So when they do it, I don't like it. But I'm all for, like, any, like, smaller mid-major school, or not necessarily mid-major, but a smaller, like, program. And there's only a handful of teams that you should storm the court for. It's like maybe anybody in the top five, if a team's undefeated, if it's a traditional power school, like, I don't want to put IU in there right now because, like you said, they've been bad for a while, but like Kansas, Kentucky, you know, a Duke, something like that, and you're like, I don't know, you're Ohio, the Ohio Bobcats, and for whatever reason, Duke agreed to this home-and-home that they didn't buy out of, and they're playing, and you beat them there, I'm all for storming the court. That's part of the college game. That's what makes college basketball fun, is those. And when it's like LSU did it against UK last week, right? And that was a buzzer beater. Like, I'm all for that atmosphere when that happens. But I feel like storming the court's also getting watered down, where schools like IU are doing it against Purdue, and you're seeing more and more of it, and that's what I don't like.
Matt Painter brought up in his press conference, and I don't know the exact, but it's something to this effect. Like, 11 of the past 14 games that Purdue has lost on the road has resulted in a court storming.
And well, that's just stupid.
Like,
I wouldn't.
That seems, and he's, and you know, and I, for all my IU fandom or whatever, I love Coach Painter, and I think he's kind of he's a great voice for, he's not real old yet, but he's very respected. He's been there a long time, and I really respect what he has to say. And you know, his point is, you know, he worries for his players getting hurt in a situation like that, and
that's why you get a LeGarrette Blount.
Yeah, right.
He solved that situation himself.
Right. But I've thought for the last few years that it was inevitable that someone was going to get hurt. Thankfully, it doesn't sound like it was too bad of an injury or whatever. But I just don't understand, you know, the mentality of having all these security guards around the court for 39 minutes and 58 seconds keeping fans off the court, and then maybe after the game's over and they say, okay, for 1 minute after the game you can't run out here, but then feel free to do whatever after we get everybody off the court.
How long does it take to actually get off the court? Like, I feel like if you're losing, well, and
that's another thing that
so, now a buzzer beater situation at LSU. I get that because that was like everybody jumped all at once. That shot went in. You immediately run down there. But like Wake Forest knew they were going to win for like 2 minutes. So I don't know. I feel like if you're Duke, you're kind of expecting this. You can get a feel. You can get your players, except for the ones that are on the court, you know.
Well, that takes me to another thing that I think is so stupid. Is that they make the teams do that handshake line after the game.
Yeah, sorry, but that's out the window.
I hate that, too. I've always thought that was dumb. Right after you've been out there trying to kill each other for 40 minutes, now you have to immediately, 1 second after the game's over, you've got to go, just get off the court. I'm 1,000% with you. And even, you know, if, like you said, if it's obviously our team's going to win, tell your guys we're not guarding them. They're not going to try to score. Get down here to our end. The tunnel's right there. And as soon as the last second ticks off, you sprint to the locker room.
Yeah, I mean, you're already ready to go. I don't know. I don't see a problem with it. I love it. And it's, look, man, we can't keep babying these guys. You know what I mean? Like, court storm is one thing. But it's hard for me to wrap my head around, like, as a Louisville fan, we've been so terrible for 2 years. If Purdue comes in as the number one ranked team and we beat them on our court somehow, I still would be irate if Louisville rushed the floor, because a school like Louisville should never rush the court.
I agree. And, of course, like I said, I don't think anybody should ever rush the court, but we can argue about that, though. That's just a matter of personal preference.
SEC's actually doing, I think they're the only conference that does it. They fine the school that does it. $100,000 on your first time, $250 on the second, $500 on the third, and that money goes to the opposite school, the school that they beat.
I was actually talking to Colin about this last night, and I said, I think if you really want to stop it, you almost have to do something like that where you say, with a minute to go or whatever, all right, ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate your enthusiasm for our team and all that, but a court storming is going to result in $100,000 being taken from the NIL collective or whatever. Oof. And given to the NIL collective of the team that we just beat. So if you really want to help our team, keep your ass in your seat.
Yeah, I don't know if you could do that with the collective.
I don't know if people donating
to the collective would probably have a major issue.
You probably couldn't do that. But, we were just spitballing ideas, and I said, until there's an actual tangible something that the average fan can relate to, like, this is not just hurting our program, it's going to help them. Maybe it's going to take something like that.
Well,
I don't
know. Say you're Wake Forest. Like, how many games are on that schedule where you think that you would storm the court for? Duke.
North Carolina.
Duke and North Carolina. That would probably be it. And I don't even know if North Carolina's playing at Wake Forest this year.
Maybe Virginia, when they've been so good.
If you storm the court for Virginia, I don't care if it was the year after they won a national championship,
Like we've talked about. Yeah. It's become and the other thing is, and I hate to, I mean, I really don't want to sound like old man yells at cloud, but so much of it now is, man, I want to get out there and have my phone up and show my boys that I was on the court after the game. And
it's not just that. Like, when you think about, like, if I go back and I look at college football, some of the most amazing moments of, like, they were like storming the field afterwards. When Tennessee beat Alabama up there, what was that, 2 years ago in Knoxville. That was one of the most amazing scenes ever.
I have to admit.
And there's going to be people with basements like yours, with, like, you've got a tribute to Indiana down here, with a tribute to Tennessee and a painting of that scene.
Yeah, but you have
on that wall.
You have way more space to do it.
If you
and way
the
more
teams
people
can walk off to the tunnel on the sides.
If you look at
in college, it ain't the same.
Speaking of that, if you look at the table where Jody's
basketball.
Sitting. There's a picture of me after Indiana beat Purdue in 2007, and the entire field is covered, and I'm standing there, you know, with my hands up, and I will admit that I did end up on the field that night.
Yeah.
I will
admit
it's almost
that.
Like a rite of passage for a college student, man. You were there for a big moment.
I was well out of college by that point.
I was well out when I did the when I stormed the field for the Louisville Florida State game.
Most
that we
of the
about.
Time in college basketball, you're waiting for someone to shoot a free throw, miss a free throw. The anticipation happens so fast. Your players can't get off. I always revert back to the funniest storm the court. Not funny, but and obviously this is a world championship. But when Boston beat the Lakers in Boston, I'll never forget. I always think of that court storm because Larry Bird is not expecting them to storm the court, and when they do. I'm talking, he jacks like five women, two men, under the chin. Yeah. I mean, now, if you
I
can pull it
that.
Up right now and see it.
I remember
and I mean,
that.
He is like getting crazy. It looks like he's getting in a fight
he's
with
He's shoulder
him.
Blocking people
and
on the
dude,
way to
that
dude,
it don't
tunnel.
Matter who it is, he's getting through and getting the hell out of there. But I always think of that when I think of that stuff and but basketball just happens so fast. They come from everywhere.
Well, that's what I was talking about earlier with the Wake Forest. There was a 2-minute time span where you knew that they were going to win that game. They had plenty of time to get their team.
Right.
And I don't know, you send five scrubs out there and be like, you guys got to take this, guys.
But as you all said,
we're getting the stars
like
to the locker
said,
room.
You've seen coaches that look at the other coach and go, great game.
Yeah.
I'm leaving. Like y'all said, that's the way it should be. You have enough sense to know that they're probably going to storm the court. Say goodbye. You don't just go shake hands. You've already talked before the game, while you were there probably in an open gym. Get the hell out.
I remember there were some guys that worked for Barstool Sports, and they would go around from campus to campus, and they would wear rain suits, and they called themselves the Storm Chasers. And they would go there, and they would
That's actually pretty clever.
It is. And they would, like, if there was, like, a potential upset, and they would go there, and their whole entire goal was to get the student section worked up to storm the court afterwards. So you would have like a, you know, 20th ranked team that beat like a 11th ranked team, and they're storming the court. And it's like, but word got out quickly on them where they were getting thrown out of
asked to not do that
any
anymore.
Arena that they walked into were escorted out fairly quickly. So, but I don't know, man. I'm all for it. I think that's. These are college kids. It is what it is.
Well, there's no, obviously, there's no, I mean.
Until somebody gets hurt.
Oh.
And that's what happened.
You know what? Nobody did anything years ago when LeGarrette Blount punched the kid from Boise State. You know what I mean? That fan comes down there, puts his arm on LeGarrette Blount's shoulder, and he turns around and punches him square in the jaw. And nothing was changed after that. And it wasn't a player that got hurt. It was a fan. But
yeah, and I honestly worry about it. And universities have got to be cognizant of that, too. Some drunk yahoo runs out on the court, gets in the face of some dude that's 6'6", 260 pounds.
Yep.
The guy just turns around instinctually. I've just been in this super competitive environment, and I've got some yahoo yelling at me. And he gets punched, his face gets caved in by a punch. Well, now the university's on the hook.
Mm.
And there's no real easy.
Was Oregon put on the hook for that? Or did LeGarrette Blount got suspended for the entire season?
He did get suspended.
That was the
for
first
the
game of the year, and I don't think he played in college anymore after that.
I don't know I would assume something was settled out of court or something. I have no idea. Mm. But the way that things are now,
kid put his hands on him, so I think he was fair game to be touched.
That's another. There's all this gray area there. Like, at what point are you just trying to protect yourself? There's a lot of nuance there. It's really not regardless of what you will hear on most, you know, sports shows or whatever. It's really not a black and white issue. There's a lot of gray area there that. You can be all for loving the excitement and the emotion of a court storming and still a little queasy about the fact that somebody might get hurt. I mean, that's a legitimate place to be. I think you and I agree that court storming or field storming should if it is allowed, should only be for legitimate reasons and not not when the, you know, your team that isn't very good beats the 18th ranked team when they have an off shooting night.
Yeah,
you know,
it's terrible.
But we've seen a lot of that lately, and but it's just, it's an interesting topic and something I knew that we needed to touch on, and something that we could probably talk about for an hour, and we'll never. It will be interesting to see now that since it's happened to a kid from Duke.
Not just a kid from Duke, the kid from Duke.
Yeah, yeah, like a star from from Duke. It'll be interesting to see what the repercussions are. And I would think that at the very least, cosmetically, the league or the NCAA or somebody's going to have to get...
Pipe down, Buttermaker.
Flipper.
Going to have to get involved and at the very least put something in effect like what the SEC does. Because from what I understand, the ACC has no rule.
No, it's wide open.
So
it's wide open. I think
SEC is the only conference that does that.
Okay,
make the fine bigger and make it.
But the thing is, like the
board.
People storming the court could care less about the fine, man. That's my whole thing. Like if you tell me, like if I'm going to storm the field if Louisville just beat an Alabama at Papa John's Cardinal Stadium, I'm on that field, and then you're going to tell me don't go on the field because it's going to cost Louisville $500,000, and that money will go to Alabama. Be like. Who gives a shit?
Wait
I'm going on the field.
Wait a minute, pal. If I got a yellow jacket, you ain't coming through me. If I'm working there, you ain't coming through
Buttermaker,
me,
Buttermaker, I would carry you out and put you on the Cardinal Bird.
If I'm getting paid to protect this field, you ain't coming through me.
Well, that's our answer.
Freddie would end up...
Fred Buttermaker is running security.
Freddie would end up on top of one of the goalposts. You would just place him up there at your leisure.
Hey, I'm heading to the beer vendor that left his beer sitting there. I'm going right. Hey, head on to the field. I'm going over here.
Finding a bunch of empty tubs
left
up in the stands.
Hey, look what I got.
Honestly, the stands may be the funnest area there is.
Yeah, just watch it happen.
Yeah.
I agree. And then you're not in. You're not involved in the. Well,
I have another solution. Win.
Well, that's true too.
How about win,
Fred?
Don't lose.
Weren't you at the IU Kentucky game when the?
Oh yeah.
When
I
Watford
was there
hit
when,
that shot,
when Guy Morris had.
You were there for that one, too.
I was, and they had the Gatorade poured on them, and they were getting ready to jump on. Hell, I think they were on the goalpost.
They were already rushing the field. When
already, and I was down where the play happened, Saban drew up a great play, and, you know.
I was part
bada
of one.
Bing!
I was part of one back in the day.
Devery Henderson.
When UK beat Alabama in football, and we tore down the goalpost.
I was actually in Lexington that night.
When UK beat Bama?
Yeah.
Well, I heard that thing ended up...
It was floating down Woodland
lake
Avenue.
Never lived, some lake I never heard of.
I don't know, like 2 a.m, it was going down Woodland Avenue.
It's in many different pieces. Some of the fraternity houses.
What was them hotels that were further out, laying between the lakes or whatever?
Oh, it ain't that far. That's all the way on the other side of the state.
I know, by Henry Clay.
The year after that is when they put the collapsible go-post in what's now...
There you go. Yes.
I remember in the, would have been the mid-90s, whenever Andy Katzenmoyer was for Ohio State.
I loved Andy Katzenmoyer.
And
you kind of look like him.
He was one of, I'd love to look like that guy. He was jacked.
Ohio State.
A little bit flabbier than him.
Beat Indiana to win the Big Ten championship in football.
Drink.
Which, of course, is not a big deal. But their fans tried to go on Indiana's field, they wanted to tear down the goalposts. And Indiana's offensive line made a circle around the goalpost, and there was this RIP, he was one of my favorite players, this big Samoan guy named Pita Elisera. And, you know, had big Samoan, had the hair and the whole deal. And I just remember seeing from the stands, he had his helmet off. And he was swinging that thing like a samurai sword, going, come on now. I have that image burned in my brain of Pita Elisera. Like, and all of a sudden, those Ohio State fans were not keen on tearing the goalposts down anymore.
must protect this house. I like that.
Oh, God.
Ohio State fans are the worst, though. I think their football fans may be probably one of the worst fan bases there is.
You're not going to get me to disagree with that.
They're coming over in Bama territory a little bit too much.
What? Like?
Yeah, they just took our director of personnel, too, a couple days ago. They're trying to find the process. And guess what? You ain't going to find it, Buckeyes.
Well, it is the Ohio State University.
You ain't going to find the process.
They're taking strays all of a sudden, aren't they?
The process is in the South, baby. Yeah, you ain't going to find it.
Screw them. They deserve every bit of it.
Which, you know, and it's kind of funny. Ohio State basketball fires their coach mid-season.
$15 million buyout. They don't care.
And has two great wins.
Mm-hmm.
Right off of that game.
Are you talking about the Ohio State? They're playing well.
They beat Purdue at home, and then they just beat Michigan State
yesterday
on a buzzer beater.
Yeah.
At Izzo's place.
There has been rumors floated around that the one and only Chris Mack's name has been surfaced for that job.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
How can you? I don't know how you can't look at the guy that's there right now.
Well, I think Texas did that last year, and that doesn't seem to work out too well.
Oh.
Some of those intern coaches, man, they're good for about
Wait a minute.
10 games tops, and then the wheels fall
Texas,
off.
Texas is coaching that, what's his name from Breaking Bad?
Who, Walter White?
No, the polo chicken guy. What's his name?
Hermosos Pollos?
Yeah, what's his name? Who was the mastermind? Was his name Gus?
Gus. Yep, that's
Gus.
It. Gus. Yeah, I mean.
He looks just like him. It's scary.
He does
it's
look
freaked
like
out. He's got them
like
glasses
him.
On.
Well, maybe that's his problem. He's too busy running his chicken restaurant to coach basketball. But I don't know, man. Those interns is a scary situation. You can't really commit to those guys too much. And
right.
Well, the attitude in the building changes for 10 days.
That's exactly right.
And then it goes back down.
It's the same thing. We've talked about it before. Like a big-time college team or an NFL team loses their starting quarterback, and maybe for the rest of that game or one game after, the team rallies around. They play with their hair on fire, but then reality sets in, and they're back to where they were but without their real head coach.
Florida State football.
Georgia Tech did pretty damn good when their coach was gone. And still are.
Speaking of backup quarterbacks in the NFL, I heard news the other day that A.J. McCarron asked out of his contract with the Cincinnati Bengals.
Ka-ka.
So he could return to the St. Louis Battlehawks.
Ka-ka.
What about that?
Damn right. He knew I had a jersey
to talk about here. For one, how awful does it have to be to be a member of the Cincinnati Bengals? Does he want to leave there?
He wants to play. I mean, he's behind Joe B, baby.
And now?
He's behind Joe football.
It shows the growth of what was formerly known as the XFL, what we'll refer to now
as the
UFL, which spring football is upon us. It's coming up.
I almost wore my Battlehawk jersey. I did.
I think
Karen special.
Is first game going to be when we're in Vegas?
Oh, I would love
I think
that.
It is.
Please tell
I
me
I think
so.
That Saturday we can be at the sports book watching NCAA basketball and is it the Renegades and the Blackhawks go in week
please
one?
Please tell me so I can bring my jersey.
Jody, can you look that up when the UFL season kicks off?
I will, but I'm not watching that game.
Sure you are. Yeah, you're lost, pal.
You get to watch A.J. McCarron versus the reigning champions.
You don't want to see me walk around like, it's caca over a touchdown in the sports book.
You know something that the St. Louis Battlehawks will never be able to say? The D.C. Defenders, too. is that they've never won an XFL championship, and they never will.
We all know who the best team was last year.
We can say we made the playoffs.
The Defenders just had a
half the league made the playoffs.
The Defenders had a bad week, and it that happens from time to time. But I expect them to bounce back
in unbelievable fashion this year. We can sugarcoat this however we want.
Oh, your rodeo team choked.
I got no argument there.
It starts the weekend after.
Oh, man, what a shame.
The 30th is their first game.
Maybe
Elite Eight games will be going, our Sweet 16 games and Elite Eight games, because it'll be that Saturday.
Yeah. I mean, where would all the NCAA fans go when all the UFL fans come to the sports?
But you had to know it would have been hilarious. We'd be like, these crazy guys won a TV on the freaking new league over here. What's going on? One of them's got a jersey.
Why did Freddie get kicked out of the sports book?
Well, that's a there could be a lot of answers to that question.
They ran out of High Noon. Pineapple.
Oh my God.
Well, what a day though, if you think about it, that Elite Eight day. You'll have those two big games going on that night. And then earlier that day, you'll have big UFL games.
Right. So, I'll do a jersey switch.
With Travis?
I got my I had on back order, I have my Derek Anderson blue jean. Remember the blue jean?
Oh, yeah. Special the Real Men Wear Denim from 98?
98, yes. So I had to jump in and find a good deal on a Wayne Turner number 5 UK jersey.
Was Derek Anderson on the 98 team?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No, oh, wait a minute. No, 96. No, 96 and
98 was the denims, wasn't it?
No. No, it was not 98. It was 96.
96. He was in 96, 97.
And he was on 96, 97. Remember, he was hurt in 97.
I was going to say, that he has to be a Patino thing. Throws. It had to be a Patino
What's
thing.
What's that?
The denim jerseys had to be a Patino thing.
I thought it was McCarty. Cornbread McCarty wanted them.
Those were the ugliest damn things.
Oh, they're horrendous.
I got some Vans that are like game Vans that are denim that I can't wait to sport.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But I do have my favorite Wildcat of all time, Wayne Turner.
New coaches right down the road.
What's that?
Prettiest jump shot in college basketball.
He coaches right down the road.
Well, time to introduce me.
He's at Atherton.
I'm ready to go meet
Wayne Turner?
The quiet, the silent assassin.
I would love to take you to meet him fanboying out. Wayne!
Right. Wiggling Wayne from Beaver Creek, baby, Maryland.
Only if you're wearing those shoes you were talking about.
That's right.
Wayne, sign my shoes.
Sign my shoes, Wayne. Come on. I think he coached at UofL too for a while. Yeah.
No, Wayne Turner?
Yes. He coached under Patino for a while.
That was Marvin Stone.
No. Marvin Stone. And Walter McCarty. Away.
Marvin Stone played there. Walter McCarty coached there.
Right, as did Wayne Turner for a while.
I don't remember Wayne Turner on that staff.
Just for a little bit. He was there for a couple of years. But a fantastic postseason performer in college basketball history. Wiggling Wayne Turner, number 5 from Beaver Creek, Maryland.
I tell you what, he could get in the lane about as good as anybody. I remember him.
He was a gamer, bro. Yeah,
it wasn't a gamer all year.
But
and
his shot was ugly.
His shot was bad.
But he didn't shoot it much.
No, he didn't. He just created for everybody else.
Right.
He was
something
else. He
played big.
Yeah.
He was quiet, too. Well, Mystery Electric.
No,
I was looking up his stat. He's the youth service coordinator to Atherton and the head.
Okay.
Women's basketball coach. He's been there almost 5 years now.
Cool. I'll go check him out.
I want to go.
That could be our first video, our blockout video on Facebook is of Freddie meeting his hero down there at Atherton.
Yes.
Running across the court with his shoes in his hand instead of on his feet.
Coach!
Coach!
Oh my God.
Have you guys ever like got the opportunity to meet your favorite like sports idol in your life in person?
That's a great question. And I have, but I'd love to hear you guys' stories first.
Go ahead, Tuna. I'll kick off. This was 2009 in Kandahar Airfield in Afghanistan. I'm in from working out at a FOB, and when I was there getting refit, there was Tommy Lasorda was in for a USO tour. And every morning that I was in Kandahar, they had this boardwalk area. And on the boardwalk, you had like your Subway, your Pizza Hut, like your Burger King. There was like, you know, normal stuff and little shops on there. And you go there and there was a Tim Hortons. And I would always go to Tim Hortons when I was in Kandahar.
It's like the Canadian Starbucks.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd go there and get a donut and a coffee because most of these FOBs I was at wouldn't really have anything. And I would always walk there with this guy, Kaz, who I worked with. Well, I slept in a little bit, and I didn't go, and I had a morning meeting that I had to be to, so I didn't make it to Tim Hortons that morning. And I run into Kazmir at the meeting, and he was like, guess what? I was at Tim Hortons and sat down and talked to Tommy Lasorda for 15 minutes this morning. He was there getting coffee.
Wow.
And I was like, coffee, and he was like, I told him about you and how much, because Tommy Lasorda is probably the biggest sports icon in my life. Like, right. That guy was just amazing. And
who don't love Tommy Lasorda?
That,
Fletch.
Yeah, true. And that one slipped through my fingers, man. So, even though I didn't get to meet him, just knowing that, like, I was that close to just sitting down and having a cup of coffee with Tommy Lasorda will always make me sick to my stomach a little bit.
That's awesome.
But, well, it could have been awesome. But other than that, man, like, I can't think of a big sports icon that I've actually gotten to meet. That was probably the closest that I got to it.
So. Fred, I know you've had some close and some close encounters.
I have had some pretty legit encounters, I must say. Really, when I was younger, I was at the age in like, fifth grade to sixth, seventh grade, I would go with my dad and them to high school, big high school football games and everyone. He knew I was a big card collector and so forth. And I remember one time he got me out of school early in 85 to take me to, he's like, if you look like you know what you're doing, you pretty much get around anywhere. So we would go to these practices at the regionals and stuff and just walk in Freedom Hall and watch them practice. And no one said nothing as long as you were just in there sitting down watching. It was before they really do that now where
right.
you can go in and watch
right.
them. And he picked me up with one of his buddies and we went up to Rupp Arena in 85 with one of the greatest Final Fours ever and went to the Hyatt and
you
a
have
program.
That program that's signed
watch,
by
I've,
everybody.
I've got probably 25-30 of the greatest coaches ever to sign, and I just walked around like a kid in a candy shop
that's
and
awesome,
knew
man.
Who some were. Some I didn't know, but as I sat and looked around, I could tell who was talking to him and how they were talking to him that they were somebody.
Yeah.
And some of those guys were so cool, like Larry Brown and Wes Unseld. They would Jerry West. They would show me someone else when they saw all the things I had. And I was the only kid in this. I mean, my dad and my buddy were drinking beer at the bar, right? You know? And they just let me run rampant. But probably the greatest thing that I had, and I had to throw that in there real quick, was I was collecting baseball cards,
I think this is the story I was going to ask you about.
It was 84,
is this
85?
The autograph that we
yes.
can't find?
Yeah. I don't want to get into the autograph, but I will tell you the story.
Yeah.
He knew I was a big card collector, so, of course, he's reading the paper one day, and he's like, the legends are coming to Louisville for a morning breakfast session. If anyone wants to get on, meet some of the greats or whatever, they were doing a banquet type thing. Well, my dad was always like, the banquet ain't good enough. We're going to get there at 7:30 in the morning, and we're going to catch them eating breakfast in the lobby, in the hotel lobby breakfast area. And we're going to beat the other kids. What I mean? And so we get...
Bill wasn't no rookie.
I remember getting up, and it was at the Hyatt Regency. We get up one morning early. I mean early. And my buddy Tater was with us. My dad's buddy again. He was like our partner in crime. And we're walking in. I'm going to go ahead and tell you the autographs I got while I was there before I tell you who we met walking in. But Stan Musial was a fantastic guy. Jesus. One of the coolest dudes you'll ever meet. Sat and talked to me for like 5-10 minutes. Luke Appling.
Are these the autographs on a napkin that you have?
Well, no, I have these on some cards. I had these immortal cards that were fake, but I didn't have these old guys.
Yeah.
Allie Reynolds. Luke Appling, these guys are old, dude.
Oh, yeah.
I got Warren Spahn's autograph. He was there. And these guys are just old guys hanging out. I got Bob Feller. I got Johnny Mize. Those are really the guys that I got. Some of them are, their autograph is literally shaking. You know, you can tell. And I didn't even have an immortal card of them. But long story short, we were walking in, and it was a rainy Saturday morning, and like I said, we got there super early, and I remember us walking up, and I had this fresh Sharpie in my hand before Sharpies were Sharpies, I think, and I had these cards in my hand, in my pocket, like, and they weren't real cards, they were the and we're walking up the stairs, and I'm not really paying attention, and my dad and Tater, like, stop in their heels, and they kind of look at me, and they look around, they look up, and coming down the steps is Joe DiMaggio with his umbrella and his freaking rain jacket, you know what I'm saying? And he's walking out. He's like, I already saw my buddies. I'm out of here. Like, I don't do this kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I'm hanging out with my guys. Dude, he comes down, and my dad and Tater just, they don't know what to say. They're just like, and they're like, how you doing, Mr. DiMaggio, sir? And I'm like, and he's like, man, how you doing? And he just keeps walking, and I pulled out, I had this card where he's on his knee, you know, like in one where he has the 56, and I pulled
the
it out,
streak.
And I took the freaking thing, and I said, could you sign my car? He goes, yeah, dude, it's just like in the old days. Sure, kid. You know what I mean? Bam, bam, and he was gone. Like, nothing. He was out of there.
And Joe DiMaggio didn't sign anything
It's the greatest thing ever. It is a 100,000% true story. I mean, Tater, my father's since passed, but Tater is alive, and he knows that we were there, and it happened,
I just want to know what happened to the damn autograph.
He's going
to
tear the house apart tonight when he goes
Tater's
got it.
I don't even want people on the other end to have to hear, I had a 65 Mustang once. That was one of my biggest regrets. Obviously,
not getting them to sign it.
Obviously, the health of family members and things like that. But material things, the Mustang is gone, and the Joe DiMaggio card is gone. And Robbie Klein, if you're listening, you have it.
Ooh, calling you out, Robbie
Klein.
One
of my buddies that had every card known to man, and I don't even want to say what I did.
We'll kick in Robbie Klein's
and
door.
I mean, I do have a pretty nice collection, and I have a lot of my nice collection because of that, but nothing could touch that card. I did not tell my dad about that for 30 years, and it was me and Tater's secret that I no longer had that card, and oh my God, I don't even want to think about it. I have looked online. I feel like I have seen it. It is there. I can tell you right now, for those that want to look it up, it is a blue, royal blue Sharpie, and it says Joe DiMaggio right across the front of a baseball immortal card.
Wow.
And I think he's kneeling on it, if I remember correctly. It was just those card starter set fake cards. And I think it was $8,000. It was going for like $8,000 to $10,000.
I would imagine.
Nothing crazy. You know what I mean?
Still.
But just to have it. And for me to be an old stupid kid that got rid of that drives me insane. And, you know, no one's ever going to have that opportunity to have it and show people. But I do have the story, and it did happen.
Yeah, that's
and,
cool.
It was fantastic. So
That's a great story. Jody, how about you?
We just talked about this the other night, Travis. I'm a Titans fan, and we were down. Myself, my buddy Kenny, another friend Matt. Matt's a Steelers fan. Kenny doesn't care about NFL. We go to Nashville, see the Titans. We end up selling our tickets for an astronomical amount of money and just partied. Well, that night after the game, we go back to the hotel to freshen up. I don't go out. I'm done. I can't move. So they go to Banana Joe's in Nashville, and I don't go. And they come back that night, and they have pictures with Javon Curse on either side of him.
The freak.
And yeah, his hands were so huge. I mean,
he was
missing out on that.
Big guy.
I did get to meet briefly Brandon Phillips and Griffey. Had a friend that worked for the Reds for a year and got to meet them for about 30 seconds. That was really cool. Met a few other people, but yeah, the one that burns me up is the freak. Yeah.
I talked about this a couple weeks ago, Fred's idol, the snake in Tuscaloosa.
Yes, that's very cool.
Drank with him that night before he went home with a 20-something-year-old college girl. True story.
I mean, he is the snake.
He is the snake, and he was up doing radio pregame like he didn't skip a beat with Eli Gold. Would you like to talk about
that? We need to talk about
that
in a few minutes.
Travis?
Yes,
well,
I know you got a lot of stuff,
I've been really lucky just growing up in Bloomington and having a lot of people that I knew that worked at the university and things. And a lot of the stuff you see down here is a result of that. I've told the Coach Knight story before. I won't go back into that. But I've got right here in front of me some pictures of Coach Pont and Jade Butcher and Harry Gonzo, all key pieces of the Rose Bowl team. And my wife and I were lucky enough to go to the Hall of Fame induction when they were all inducted to the Indiana Sports Hall of Fame. They were all still alive. And that was a really special thing because that was a team that meant a lot to my dad and everything. But one of my favorite things is this pair of shorts over here. For some of you younger listeners, or
a little tight on tuna,
people that don't know who
everything is, bro,
who Quinn Buckner is. Quinn Buckner was the starting point guard for Indiana 1975-76 when they were undefeated for 2 years in a row, and
one of the greatest college, if you put a greatest college basketball team together, the starting five or six, he probably would be on it.
Well, he's one of the great winners in the history of basketball. He was state champion, captain of his, and a leader. State champion, captain of his high school team. National champion at Indiana, captain. Captain of the 1976 Olympic team that won a gold medal. A key piece of the 85 or 86, we'd have to ask Ike. He was on the Celtics when they won a world championship. Didn't play a lot, but was a key locker room guy and a leader for that team. Anyway, my dad's maybe his favorite player of all time. And several years ago, we had opportunity. He's now the color commentator for the Pacers games. And we had an opportunity to go and meet the broadcast team and things like that. Well, several years ago, I was able to procure a pair of his shorts, game-worn shorts, from the 1976 season. And I always thought, man, wouldn't that be cool if I could ever show these to Quinn and have, well, I ended up having that opportunity. And, you know, they always say don't meet your... Quinn Buckner is one of the coolest dudes ever. And I walked up to him and I said, Quinn, this is my dad. He was a huge fan of yours. I was a little too young to remember you as a player, but I know all about you and all that. I said, and a few years ago, this is one of my prized memorabilia pieces. And I pulled him out of this bag I had and I handed him to him and he held him up and he goes, can you believe my fat ass ever fit into these things? And I mean, it just broke the ice immediately. Warm-ups are going on the court. He's probably should be working. He ended up talking to me. I asked him a few questions about playing for Coach Knight. And then I said, would you sign these for me? And he said, of course I would. And so he signed those for me, and they're hanging up on that door right there. And that's one of my...
prized possessions.
Yeah, that's something that... It's probably not worth anything monetarily, but you couldn't offer me... There's no amount of money that would get me to part with those.
Can we take a picture of those and put them online?
Yeah, please.
Because I don't know that Emmalou can... Those things are tiny.
They are. It's like blows me away every time I see
them. And Buckner was not a... He's not a small guy,
dude,
even when he played.
Dude,
I mean...
Man.
How tall is he?
He was also a great color commentator.
Well,
as time went by, he was really good.
Well, he did
6'3".
Yeah, I was gonna say he was like 6'3", probably weighed over 200 pounds when he played.
His listed weight is when he played was 6'3", 190.
Yeah. He is a big guy. He was a big guy.
And I know you guys have probably more. Everyone has more people. That we can say, I remember meeting Patino in 87 when he won the championship at Freedom Hall with Providence, and I got his autograph.
The regional, coming, you mean.
Coming out of the locker room. He was a chubby old white kid. You know, it was just so young, and of course my dad and I are up there waiting for him because they were the gem of Louisville, upsetting Alabama and Kansas and... Although Georgetown that year, we snuck in for practices. But Travis and I have one we could end with, maybe. When we were lucky enough to be standing in a hotel lobby downtown in Louisville doing a food event, and we happened to be walking outside to get something. I don't know. We came back in and we're standing at the top of the escalator, and our wives are inside. Sampling food or tasting food, a different restaurant and things at this banquet. And there's a lot going on in the hotel. And we look down and she had just left the front desk and she turns around. She's coming towards us and we're looking at her and it's Pat Summitt.
Oh.
And she's got these blue eyes that you can see from so far away.
They were in town to play Louisville at the Yum Center.
Yeah.
And Fred... I'm going to tell this story.
Yeah, you tell the story because
I love this story. So I was actually coaching girls basketball at the time at collegiate. I was coaching the middle school girls team at that point. And, of course, just being a basketball person or a basketball fan, Pat Summitt is on the Mount Rushmore of the greatest coaches of all times. So we see Pat Summitt. We see her team. We go down.
She's pulling her luggage, remember?
Yeah. We go down, and I introduce myself. I think I introduced Jerry or Fred, and we're talking. And
Buttermaker.
She she says, you know, it's very nice to meet you guys.
What's your names?
She did. She asked us our names, what we were there for, and all that. So anyway... We go back to the event and do our thing, and the event's winding up, and of course...
Remember Fred, we told our wives who we'd see, they're like, who's that?
They're right. And so Fred and I, as the thing's winding down, we're like, we're going to go down to the bar, as we do, and we're going to have a cocktail or whatever.
And remember, I grabbed a book. I grabbed the banquet book.
Each had those books, and we go back down there. Well, now... Coach Summitt and her coaching staff are sitting at this booth, and I'm a little nervous about it, but Fred's a little more forward on things like that. And he went over and, you know, he was like, Coach.
Well, remember she looked at it, she goes, Jerry, Travis, what are y'all doing here?
Yeah, that's what I was getting ready to get to.
Like, she remember our name.
She's called us out by name, told us to come over. Literally, it's Pat Summit, her coaching staff, and me and Fred sitting in this round booth.
Yeah.
Like, and she starts asking us questions. Well, I don't remember if it was me or Fred. We said, we would love, Coach, if you would sign our books for us. She goes, I'll tell you what. She goes, I remembered you guys' names. She said, I'll sign that if one of you can remember the assistant coach's name that I introduced you to when we were in the lobby.
Test time.
She goes,
not at Buttermaker's Alley.
She goes, no. She goes, this gal is going to be a great coach at some point. And of course, I'm like, I don't know. And to Fred's credit.
Oh.
Fred got it right.
He's a gamer coming through the clutch.
He got it right. And he was like, I honestly do not remember her name. And
I'm not quite sure if I do.
She signed our book. And I think she might have taken over for Pat Summit
Keisha?
At the end of her,
yeah,
at her career.
Yeah.
But Freddie stepped up and nailed it.
Oh, we were like, oh my gosh.
And she got the biggest kick out of that. And I'm telling you, that was what? Only 2 or 3 years before she had to step
right
down.
And she goes, guys, whatever you do, remember people's names and information. And then you could tell that this is something that she was working on. Or something that she was great at and getting ready to lose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And like, she was probably practicing it
nonstop. Right. Because we didn't know that she.
I don't think anyone did.
Was
until, like,
going
right before
to
it happened.
Have what, you know, be mm-hmm. diagnosed with what she was diagnosed with. But maybe she was then. Maybe even people had already known about it and we didn't know. Just people in Tennessee. But you know what I'm saying? It was just so ironic that. That's how she passed and was diagnosed with after she went through that whole thing with us.
Yeah, and that was honestly one
of
the.
And it was like, you want to talk about just a good, like, I mean, we came in there walking in there and, oh, Jerry Travis, what y'all doing back? What y'all doing here? You know, like, dude, like you had known her all your life.
She invited us to sit.
Yeah. Oh, and all the girls were there. Like it was intimidating. Trust me.
They had two buckets of Miller Lite on the table, and she was like, "Grab a beer,
dude." It was hilarious.
And that's one of the. I'm so glad that you brought that up, Fred, because I probably would have failed to mention that, but that really was maybe the.
Yeah.
Tip top of the mountain
right,
as far
right,
as
right.
something like that goes, because we had not just one, but two real interactions with her and got to see her at that level of
and such a very pretty, just so dressed, so nice. And her eyes were so blue.
That's the thing, Fred. Couldn't you, like, she's one of those people.
She put me in that, quicksand, dude.
She's one of those people that they always talk about this, like, when you walk into a room and you can kind of feel the heaviness of the charisma of somebody.
Yes.
And she had that.
Yeah, she did. It was
she
crazy.
Had that. But that's a great story. I'm so glad that you brought that up.
I love that story, but what I got out of that was the University of Tennessee Athletic Department bought you beer.
I don't even remember that.
Rocky Top.
Yeah, but anyways, no, they were definitely sitting down having dinner or something, and I don't even think they had played U of L yet.
No, the game was the next night, and I promise you, it was two buckets of Miller Lite. I'll never forget it.
Yeah, and you know, I'm sure it was her or assistant coaches and whatever, and all the personnel. I don't think the players were.
The players were
there.
Not there. No, it was.
Right.
It was just
all of.
It was just her and the assistants.
Yeah,
that's all it was.
It was
and
very cool.
And I also
that was at the Marriott.
Yep, and I also remember the other. Like, I'm sure this was not the first time that this type of situation had happened, because I remember when Coach Summit said, I'll sign that if you can remember the name of my... I remember all the other ladies at the table were like, here we go.
Here we go. Yeah, they're like, ah. We're like,
And I still have my Coach Summit autograph.
Yes,
Fred,
I do. I have mine in the garage bar.
Awesome.
Yes. On the March of Dimes banquet.
Well, that's those are cool stories. And if you guys, as listeners, have a neat story like that, reach out to us on social media. I would love to hear you all's stories. We can share some of those in a future episode. We're, like I said, we're in a weird time right now sports-wise, so we can get into some other things like this. And, Tuna, I'm glad that you took the lead on that and kind of pushed us down that path. That was a really cool discussion. I wanted to...
Good job, Buttermaker.
It's your Buttermaker.
Quickly touch on the fact that the... As you mentioned earlier, Tuna, the Combine is this weekend. We got the news today that Marvin Harrison Jr. Is not going to participate.
Smart move, kid.
Is there anything in particular that, maybe a player that you are looking forward to seeing how he tests at this thing or anything like that?
I'm going to be a little bit of a homer here, but the cornerback from Louisville, Jarvis Brownlee Jr., went to Senior Bowl and stood out, and he impressed every single scout that was there. And he has shot his way up the draft board already. I'm curious to see how he does at the combine this weekend. Jarvis Brownlee Jr.
Well, why didn't he play?
He did.
He did play for us.
He did, and he's working his way up into a second to third round draft pick, which I never would have thought. But he was a Florida State transfer.
Okay. Well, apparently the coaches didn't think it either.
He played a lot. but other than that, man, I mean, there's tons of good little running backs in here. Like the quarterbacks, I'm not even really sure who's going to throw. Is Bo Nix throwing this weekend?
I think he is.
I think Bo Nix is an intriguing guy in this draft. I really do. Other than that, I think the biggest storyline going into draft that we're all looking at is – what are the Bears going to do? Is Justin Fields going to be there next year? Is he not?
I don't know why they wouldn't keep him.
I'll tell you why they wouldn't keep him, because they're going to have to pay him.
Right.
And if you can get a good rookie quarterback and you get that three-year window with a rookie quarterback and what they could get for Justin Fields, I'm not sure. Maybe a third-round draft pick, tops.
I feel like the Bears are really coming along right now and have an opportunity to do something, possibly – try to make the front end of the playoffs this coming season.
I say this, in a perfect world,
Marvin Harrison along with DJ,
a salary cap,
DJ wouldn't help
I keep Justin Fields. Without a salary cap in a perfect world,
okay,
I draft Marvin Harrison Jr. I have DJ Moore, Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah,
and I work on getting an offensive line.
I mean, they've got a couple good
but
running backs.
The reality is the way that teams want to win in the NFL right now is why the quarterback is cheap. And when you get a rookie quarterback, like the Houston Texans have it made for the next 2 years.
Yes.
Right.
They have more cap space than you could even imagine. And the talent that they're going to be able to surround CJ Stroud with is going to be insane.
Right. I think it turns out that the Colts made a good choice. And I think I definitely questioned it. Now, he did get hurt, but he was playing well before he got hurt, and look what they did without him. I still think that the Colts are in a good position.
Oh, look out. Here comes the AFC South.
Well,
baby.
I mean, dude, I mean, look at
the
teams that came out of there.
The worst team in the division is going to be Jody's Titans.
None of us had the Texans doing jack squat.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely
Anything's
right.
possible, man.
And am I right about Caleb Williams and Jayden Daniels are not going to the combine?
They're not.
Either.
I don't even know what Drake May's doing. So
I think he is.
Okay. I don't know what these guys have to gain. If you're going to be projected as a first rounder, stay home. Don't even go that weekend. Like, all you're going to do is hurt yourself.
Right.
Unless you just want to participate in the bench press and meet coaches.
I love doing the bench press.
But I think going around like meeting the coaches, like sitting there in those interviews where they ask you all like the weirdest questions possible.
Yeah. Right.
Like, why would you want to submit yourself to that? Like, I'd be like, you know what? You want to draft me? Come woo me. Come to my pro day. Tell me why.
Right.
Like,
yeah, pro day's where it's at.
Yeah.
Right.
That combine, man, I feel like that's just for like your middle tier guys.
Yeah, you're right. It is.
But other than that, there's still
U of L, Auburn, Tennessee, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Middle tier.
Okay, Caleb DeBoer.
But if you are going to Indianapolis this weekend, I would heavily.
It'd be a great place to meet some of your sports.
That's right.
People.
That's what kind of may have gotten you on this.
I would
thing.
Heavily advise you to go at about 4 o'clock and post up at the bar at St. Elmo and just watch people walk in. And
tune up, wear a blazer. Get you a blazer. You know, one time I got a blazer. And my mom and dad were having dinner and shenanigans, and they said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to the Galt House, Gene Stallings, Jay Barker are there. He won the Unitas Award. I'm going in. I'm getting his autograph. And they're like, really? And I said, I'll be back here at 9 o'clock to have a beer with you. Went in there, walked in like I knew what I was doing, got Dan Fouts' autograph at the wet bar on a doily. Walk in.
Hey, Dan Fouts, you signed
in,
my doily.
They
I'm
said,
supposed
who
to be
would
here.
Like, who would like to get autographs? I got there right when it was over. Everybody started getting up. I went right in line. I got, oh, by the way, Johnny, I'll take your autograph while you're staying here. Got Gene Stallings, shook his Junction Boy crooked fingers. Got Jay Barker, and I was out. You can do it.
I'm just going to wear a shirt that says, I love you, Andy Reid.
No, you can't look like
I'm gonna dress.
An autograph. You have to look like you're already there.
You know what?
I'm gonna dress like Andy Reid.
You know what? No.
With like icicles on your.
No. You have got to go to one of these consignment shops and get a red blazer and have Fred fashion you a KC thing like Hank Stram used to wear.
Hot glue it right there, logo.
And just go sit at the bar like and when those guys walk in, go, keep matriculating your way over here, boys. Keep matriculating your way over here,
just
boys.
Say, I'm from the what's the name of your stadium?
Arrowhead Stadium.
I'm from the Arrowhead Club.
Okay.
And I'm here to get your autograph for all the boys back home. Then you do it. And you get a couple different guys. But here's the thing. Travis and I have done that a lot. Not to continue on about that. But, dude, when you go to the Final Four, you don't go hang out, drink beer, listen to the bands play where people are puking out the street. You go to the hotels that the teams are playing at and where all the coaches intervene and are schmoozing. You go sit there and get a table and look halfway decent. And you get a drink and you watch everybody and talk to I mean, Travis and I had a drink with Gene Cady.
We certainly did.
I mean, we've done it all. We said, hey, Jay Billis, what's up, Jay? He goes, what's up, guys? What are you two into? And we're like,
we work for the NCAA.
Walking around, seeing all the action. We're like, you're getting ready to go to that Duke dinner that's private in that room. And he's like, yes, I am. We can see through there that everybody was in this room where Duke was at. But and then we hung out with Chris Mack half the night and didn't even know it was him for a while. I mean,
I did.
Yes, you did. You did know it was him. But
that was another. I'm not going to get into that story. No, but that was another situation where I got to kind of break the ice with him because I said, I saw you play in the NCAA tournament right up the street live in 1990. And he was like, you were at that game? And I was like, hell yeah, I was at that game. You guys beat Georgetown. And he was like, well, come on over and let's talk about it.
Right, yeah.
And then remember it was about 2:15 in the morning, and he's like, I got to get up in 4 hours, boys. I got to go to bed.
Yeah. And he was literally there. He was the Xavier head coach, been to a couple Elite Eights, and was networking. That's what they're all doing. They're all there networking. When it gets down, I've never done the football thing like that, but I've done the basketball thing, and it's pretty foolproof. You can find all those guys.
The Final Four is really...
It's such a celebration. It's very cool.
It's where, if you want to do something like that, go to the Final Four, find out the team hotels, hang out in the bars, and you will inevitably meet a billion people.
Right,
and
or
if you wanna,
see them. Or
if
just
you want to get autographs,
and...
you want to shake their hand, you want to tell them that you've appreciated them.
Yes.
It's probably the easiest and
best thing
to do from that standpoint. We are getting into Major League Baseball. I know we don't want to do a full baseball breakdown quite yet, but I have noticed that you know, I've been following some scores on games and things like that. I think we have maybe a couple of picks coming up for later on this week that may be baseball related. Tuna, is there anything baseball related that sticks out to you right now?
Yeah, the uniforms are awful.
I did want to bring those up.
You can see the players' balls, which is a problem.
Whoa.
You can, and it's a problem. The jerseys look like they were made by the four of us just down here cutting material up. I don't know how they botched it this bad. I don't know if Rob Manfred's doing anything about it. Rob Manfred came out, I guess it was last week, and said that he is not renewing after the next 5 years. So we are in our last 5 year stint with Rob Manfred, who is a terrible commissioner. He is the one that called the World Series trophy a hunk of metal. and did absolutely nothing to the Houston assholes. So, but I don't know that situation. The uniform's got to work itself out. Other than that, it's too early to tell the type of play that's going on. I will say, like I mentioned earlier to you guys, all three of you surrounding me are Cincinnati Reds fans. And I do believe, you know me, I'm a big skeptic when it comes to this, and I've never been a big Reds guy. I will say that team looks like it could be a little bit dangerous and a team to keep an eye on. And that Central, I think, is wide open.
Right.
The Cardinals are going to be vastly improved this season.
Yeah.
Other than that, we might be looking at a two-horse race with Cincinnati
and
St. Louis.
I think we've all talked about this. I think the Reds pinpointed this year. Jody's talked about it. Travis has talked about it. Other Reds fans we know I'm talking about, I think even last year, yeah, we got hot for a while, and we knew it wasn't going to last. But I think that we did know that next year could be the year that we can maybe get something going all the way through the season.
Well,
McClain's a star
halfway through the season.
In the making. Matt McClain, I gush over this kid. I think he's absolutely incredible.
Love him.
De La Cruz has potential to become a star, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
They
figured him out a little bit. But
yeah, but
it's
how he adjusts, and that's what this year is going to be so big for him on how he adjusts to it.
Right.
That's the best thing for McClain, though, because he gets to sit in the shadows and go, I'm just going to keep doing my job and enjoying what I'm doing and play hard.
He puts his head down, comes to the ballpark and works his butt off every day. I love the hell out of that kid.
Our problem is starting rotation.
Well, obviously,
and has been. But bigger than that is our ownership.
That bullpen this year, though.
But we have a better bullpen,
early.
I think.
Yeah, they look like they could be something early. So,
well, I sure hope so. I'm as a long-suffering Reds fan, I'm never going to believe it till I see it.
But, yeah, I'm with you.
But it does at least give you – I mean, there have been several years in the past – 15, 18 years where you had no hope going into the season.
Right.
And now at least I have hope that they will be an interesting story.
Well, I'm not going to pin the title on it. Remember last year we talked, it was like sleeper teams. I said Arizona Diamondbacks and the Baltimore Orioles.
Right.
I think both of those exceeded expectations.
Yes.
I'm not going to tag the Reds there just yet because it's a little too early.
Right.
But before the season starts, I want to put together some sleeper teams, and I think the Reds are knocking on that door.
No,
yeah,
for sure.
We'll do a deep dive into Major League Baseball.
Speaking of pin, I have the Brewers already on my voodoo doll, so we're good there.
I don't think they even need to be on there.
Right.
I think this is going to be a rough year for the
Brewers.
Oh,
I know. I don't care. I want it to be a rough year. It is on the voodoo doll. We do not have to worry about the Brewers.
Fred, do you have anything relative to horse racing for this week?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I was going to just say that we did the Rebel Stakes this past weekend, and one of the favorites that was running, that was making his sophomore debut, was Timberlake. I know Tuna loves Justin Timberlake.
Big fan.
So this could be a solid stalker that is going to be in the top 10 and running on Derby Day.
And we know you like stalkers.
I love stalkers. Mm-hmm. That is the way. I mean, pretty much the stalker, you have your front runner, you have your stalker, and you have
the guy
your closer,
in the bushes. Yeah.
And your stalker has
won.
His
wife.
The stalker has won the
I found your
Derby
mail. Yeah.
The last several times. It is the pace is always so fast. Everybody's so amped up. You got so many horses in there that you're definitely going to find a rabbit. And it's almost gotten kind of crazy that you almost need bad weather or something. Also in the Saudi Derby was this weekend, and there is a Japanese horse,
right,
Tuna, that is pretty damn good. The best horse that I've seen yet.
Dice K.
Come in, that is from, no, oh, and it isn't Dema Satokake. It is
Derma.
Forever Young.
That's
he
not
was
Japanese.
Already, excuse me. He is was already 3-for-3.
Say his name in Japanese.
Hayao Tsuchita.
Nailed it.
Forever Young. And 4-for, he is 4-for, or now 4-for-4, has won the Saudi Derby.
Who
and
sings that
song? Be a horse to be reckoned with.
You just
I'm
pissed
you
off all our Japanese listeners.
No,
Forever
they
Young.
Love me.
Who sings that song?
Rod Stewart.
Rod Stewart is jockeying
Forever
that horse.
Forever Young. I need to do that karaoke now.
Yeah,
I?
You do.
That's always an uplifting song.
I agree.
Tuna, I think that's a good Sunday morning coffee song for you.
Yeah,
morning.
We'll do a duet.
but we do have 4 Derby preps this weekend, guys. It's time to get into it, because coming up after these 4 is the Florida Derby, the Tampa Bay Derby, the Arkansas, the Wood, all these. So we need to get into it. And, you know, a lot of the horses are waiting a little bit later for those races, but some horses need points. Let's start with the Fountain of Youth. I'm not going to go through them, but I'm going to tell you the horses that I'm just looking at, because I haven't done my handicapping, and a couple of these races don't even have the field isn't even out. But you have the Fountain of Youth, you have the Gotham, the John Battaglia, and the San Felipe this weekend. Excuse me. And you've got Dornick is one of the top 5 horses that has yet to run and start his sophomore debut. He will be running in the Fountain of Youth. That is Danny Gargan's horse, Travis.
Yeah.
That's someone that we know from Louisville. And we, also, you've got Frankie's Empire. You've got Locked in there. That's a Pletcher horse that's in the top 7. I am going to go on a limb and try to beat these horses and maybe throw a little on Speakeasy. Of course, I'll have some of the chalk on top and some wheel bets, but I always like to, on the side, try to pick a different horse that I think could get hot. In the Gotham, you've got another horse that is just starting off, Just a Touch. That is Justifies Son. He is going to be running in the Gotham. I'm going to try to possibly beat him with El Grande O, who's ran 10 races already. That's way too many to run to get me on the Derby trail, in my opinion.
He's Grande.
Yeah. And then the John Battaglia and the San Felipe have yet to pop up, but of course, doesn't matter. You get Derby points for all these races, first, second, third. So anyways, that's kind of what I got for you there. But I do think the Fountain of Youth has a great field, way better than what the Rebel had this past Saturday. So definitely watch that race. I think there's 12 entries in there, and should be a good one. As we keep going, I'm going to next week. I don't know if we have a lot to talk about, but after those four, I'm going to give you my top 20.
I love that.
My Derby top 20, because I have yet to do it. And I'm going to put everything together and do my top 20. Also running, I'm sorry, one horse that's running also is just FYI, a filly that is a serious, serious contender. And she's going to be running Saturday in Florida as well on that card with the Fountain of Youth. Not against the boys, but look for her to cap her season off. And she will be an Oaks horse that will definitely be one of the favorites moving forward, barring injury or
so
something.
So they know after this weekend how many Derby preps are left.
I would say just on my – I mean, you've got a couple over in Europe that pop in there.
Nobody cares
because
about
they
them.
Get points. Yeah, we've already got the European horse that we know. I think we've got the and I'm just doing this off my head, but I think we've got the Tampa Bay Derby, eventually the Florida Derby, the Arkansas Derby, the Wood Memorial, the Bluegrass Stakes, and then I think there's always one at the end. It used to be called the Coolmore.
So there's five or six.
Yeah,
there's
five a handful or six. Left. Yeah. Yes, the big ones. All the big ones are coming.
Right.
Louisiana Derby, my favorite one, will be stacked. Trust me, it will be stacked. So can't wait for that one. And the Santa Anita, of course. And we still have yet to find out if Bob Baffert's horses are going to be in or out.
I was going
to
ask you
about
that.
There's been a rumor going around, like I said last week, that they were getting ready to maybe be in. Now it's a stagnant thing, and I heard from a pretty good source that he doesn't think that's going to happen. So
okay.
We'll see.
Well,
when you don't see him entered in some of these races, even though some of these races are in Florida and Aqueduct, you know, they're none of them are out. You know, the San Felipe is out west, so we'll see what that field looks like. And if he's got, I'm sure he's going to have horses in it. The horse I'm looking for is, Nysos. That is my number one horse, and it is a Bob Baffert horse. And you want to talk about athletic coming around turns and stuff. I can't wait to see if that horse is going to run. All right, that's it for me on that.
Cool.
Tuna? Who's your horse?
Love Nysos. Big Nysos horse.
I'm going to get you on.
I'm telling you, man, the athleticism I've seen in this horse, I haven't seen anything like it in some time.
You know, our new goal is for y'all to watch these races.
He can run
around
them turns.
These races, and I'm going to get you in moving forward. Because if I'm going to bet baseball, you got to bet horses.
So wait a minute. You're all into the NBA. There's an NBA player that's big into horse racing. You know who that is?
Rex Chapman?
Jokic.
Oh, okay.
He's got a few horses that he's bought in the last few years and won quite a bit of money.
Nice. Okay.
Well, with all that stuff being said, fellas, we are approaching the end of our time here. We were, as always, we never know how long these shows are going to last when there's not necessarily big games to talk about right off the bat. But I think tonight's episode was unique and different. I'm going to send it around the room to you guys. Don't necessarily have to have picks. If there's games you're looking forward to this weekend or anything else, we'll just send it around. Take as much time as you want. Tuna.
Picks-wise, I didn't have anything for you last week. I've got one for you this week, and it's by the time you listen to this, it'll be tonight, Tuesday night, February 27th. I do really like Cincinnati to cover the 13.5 at Houston tonight. That's a lot of points. And also looking forward to this weekend slate of games to keep an eye on. Obviously, we don't have lines out for these yet, But it's I think the Florida South Carolina game is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah,
and then followed up with Kansas and Baylor. It's a loaded slate. We're getting like Marquette, Creighton, so on. And also, if anyone has a free moment, try to listen to a podcast. It's a Joe Rogan podcast. I don't know how you feel about him, but he had Billy Walters on as a guest, who is a all-time electric factory in the sports gambling world.
My brother.
Yeah, your brother, Mr. Electricity. Take a minute or a couple hours and listen to this. It's just a great interview. I love listening to him, the way he talked about breaking games down and so on. So, Fred, Buttermaker.
I want to give a shout-out to the HYR Apples. That is my son's basketball team. They went 9-0 in the 7 and 8 year old category and won the championship 38-14.
We're pushing them all towards collegiate, by the way.
Yeah, there you go.
For their middle school career.
I do think that they won by a.
You want to deal with that parent?
I think they won by an average of probably 18 points a game.
Were the Bananas runner up?
No, they were not. I want to give a shout out. 9-0 season, fantastic job. One of our players that's getting better and better every week had a last second shot. We got him that bucket at the end. It was awesome. The whole crowd went crazy. We ran a play called the Worm, and it worked awesome. Dating back to last year, we are 18-1. I will say, winning a two-time back-to-back champions in the HYR Apples. So, kudos to those kids. They
go
played
Apples.
Great.
Right up there with the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yep,
back-to-back.
Jody,
the Worm, Corn Dog. What's the difference?
I want to say congrats to UK. We didn't talk basketball much this week. Congrats, big game this weekend. I know Tuna texted us during the game and said UK looked really good. They picked up on their D. They did give up 95 points. That's
the Nigerian sat.
But
the pace of that game, was insane.
It was number one offense against number three offense, yeah. But it was number 316 defense against number three.
And they were also
defense.
Up by 1,000 in the second half, so the defensive intensity wasn't necessarily. Yeah,
true, exactly. True. But he did start the game with Big Z getting way more minutes, and the Nigerian that doesn't have a great feel for the game yet because he's barely even freaking played, he finally put him on the bench and let him watch for a while, and Big Z came in, and the team seemed to mesh all around him.
Big Z's no look.
Big Z doesn't even
behind
shoot
the back
threes.
Pass was just gorgeous, by the way.
Yeah, I'm just saying, dude, this is going to happen and move forward, and Kentucky's a different team. I think Edwards went 10 for 10. Who's the last Wildcat to do that?
Best in Cal history since he's been there. You know, Edwards was the number one recruit for most of the year last
year. And has
year.
Been very patient.
So
and
it's,
has a
it's
great
not like
attitude.
It's a shock, but he's
right,
come
but
along.
He yeah. I really like his attitude throughout the season. He hasn't gotten mad or really hurt the team by not doing great. He's kept his head up. He smiled, and I got to give him a lot of points for that. I really do respect the kid.
All right,
the way
Fred,
he's handled himself.
Let's let Jody get
yeah, you
through
two get
his
a room.
Part.
Oh, okay. We didn't talk about Kentucky. It was a huge win.
Back to that, one thing that Fred just touched on, the one thing about UK this year is most of those kids, they have great attitudes, they get along, they like each other, and they look like they're having fun, even though we've lost them. So my picks this week, I got UK plus 2.5 at Mississippi State. It's an away game. That is going to be a very tough game. That's tomorrow night at 7. And then I'm taking the money line. We don't know.
That should be a great game.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
going to be a great game.
Mississippi State is a great guard.
They have the
great
same record.
Guard. That guy is unbelievable.
That's a 2.5 point spread.
Yeah, that'll be.
They have the same record, and that's going to determine if we a big way. If we can run the board, we get the double bye in the tournament, which
there
is huge.
Go.
That said, look at University of Tennessee's remaining schedule. They have a tough schedule left. A very tough schedule. So if we can run the board, that'd be great. Also, Saturday, UK plays Arkansas at home at 1:30. And yeah, I'm just taking the money them. Line yeah, on that.
We should no sense in even mentioning that yeah, one.
They'll kill them.
Yeah. Should, but
Devo Davis has been playing well, though. I give him that. So
take the Cats, both games this week.
I don't know.
Awesome.
Don't bet against the must bus.
Colin is taking Texas Tech -4 against Texas. He is taking Nevada. I've got it at +6 against Colorado State. And he said, just to mess with Tuna, he's taking the Reds against the Dodgers in their spring training game.
Get it while you can, boys. Spring's the time to get it.
Oh, I love it.
Get it while you can.
I love that bet.
I am sticking to my guns and taking Wisconsin to cover no matter what. I mean, it's 4, but they're going to beat Indiana by 100. I am also taking Nevada +6. Those are my two picks. And quickly, I just saw some breaking news for I know there's a few people that listen every week that are old school wrestling fans like myself.
Oh, I thought another coach left Bama.
And I would like to say RIP to the great Ole Anderson, who is one of the original Four Horsemen, along with his gimmick cousin Arn, Nature Boy Ric Flair, and Tully Blanchard. Also was a head booker for the NWA for several years. So RIP Ole Anderson. He lived to be the ripe old age of 81, which for professional wrestlers of that era is a pretty damn good run. I want to thank you guys for being here. It was a fun episode tonight. Want to thank everybody for listening. For Mr. Electricity, Whiteboard Jody, the big fellow of the Tuna Country, Matt Kempf, and the fabulous one, Freddie Benders, this is Travis Carter saying so long, everybody.